the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, one of the statistics that we've seen develop in retirement is people are living longer. The average life expectancy has gone up almost every single decade. It's not unusual to see people live into their late 80s, 90s, and even 100. One of the issues that many retirees confront as they age is the possibility, because of an illness, ending up in a long-term care facility. How do you handle those additional expenses? That's the topic of today's program. Joining me on the program is Brian MacArthur, and he is Vice President of Bridalwood Insurance. Brian, you know, I'm looking at some statistics here. Since we're in California, I'm going to speak of California. This may vary by state. The average cost is $290 a day in a long-term care facility. Annual cost could be $110,000, and the average stay is 2 years. How does one handle long-term care? You know, there's insurance, but a lot of people just, you know, when they retire at age 65, Brian, they're not thinking of long-term care. They're thinking about doing all those things they always dreamed of doing when they were retired. So how do you deal with this issue?
A great question, Jim. You know, I'd start off and say, once the long-term care event presents itself, the retiree or the couple, they've either planned for it or they haven't, okay? And there's great arguments to be made for why you should plan for it ahead of time. However, once it shows up at your front door, you just kind of have to figure it out, right? People, those bills are often as big as what you just referenced, and I've even heard plenty of examples where they could be even higher than that. And people just have to figure it out. It's certainly easier to figure out how to accommodate the expense of long-term care if you've planned ahead. And, you know, the strategies range from one, not planning at all and believing it's not going to happen to you, which I wouldn't recommend, but I also don't want to villainize because at times it's a popular approach. Number two would be, of course, self-insuring, which means that you're not buying insurance, but you know, the most prudent thing to do there, Jim, would be to just have a conversation with your financial advisor that just goes something like this. Hey, Jim, if I need long-term care tomorrow, we just need to figure what asset am I going to liquidate first. Reference back to some of the numbers you just shared. You know, that conversation should probably be which $100,000 will I liquidate first when I need long-term care. It's usually not the high-flying, best-performing part of a portfolio. It's usually the safer, you know, safer parts. Things are, if it's not cash, it might be something that feels like cash. And once that $100,000 goes through it, you have to figure out what's the second $100,000, right? So self-insuring is an option. I never villainize that. Thirdly, would be doing it, you know, planning with some sort of insurance. And there's a few different ways to approach that.
You know, Brian, one of the issues that really strikes me is insurance, just like anything else, whether it's long-term care insurance, life insurance, gets expensive the more you age. And, you know, the best thing, as you mentioned, would be either to self-insure or let's say obtain some kind of long-term care insurance. But here's the problem. You know, most people don't think about this when it's cheap. In other words, taking out a policy when you're in your 50s or let's say at best early 60s. The problem is when you start seeing your friends, maybe you get into your 70s and you see it happen to your friends or other people in your neighborhood, then all of a sudden you start thinking about it. That's when it gets to be expensive. So what do you do then?
Right. And it's a very, very real set of circumstances, Jim. As you said, if you can address it earlier, that's great. But, you know, in your 50s, you're probably paying for college tuition and kids' weddings and home remodels and things like that. What I will share is, as you look at long-term care planning, there's kind of three different approaches that can accommodate the, you know, rising cost of insurance and people's ability to fund these strategies. Number one is traditional long-term care insurance. And what I would say is a lot of people, to your point, are really usually just starting to think about planning for long-term care in their 60s. And traditional long-term care insurance, I would never rule it out, but that's a very good example of insurance that will be very, very expensive if you're waiting till, you know, your 60s or beyond to address it. A lot of people look at traditional long-term care. It has a multi-$1,000 annual premium. It could be $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a year for a couple. If we knew you needed long-term care, it would be a wise move, but we're never positive. The challenge with traditional long-term care, which I find creates a lot of people looking at it, but maybe not acting on it, is that one, those premiums are expensive. Two, you could pay your whole life into it and never need long-term care. That's a possibility. I would never say that you wasted the premiums there, Jim, but you did pay into something that you never saw monetary value back. And then number three, which people who own traditional long-term care policies have seen, is that those premiums can and do and probably will have increases from time to time. The insurance companies can go back to the insurance commissioner in the state they're domiciled and cry poverty and say, hey, we're paying out more in claims and we're taking in premiums. They won't pick Jim Poplava out of a lineup and say, we're just going to increase Jim's, but they might say we're going to increase rates of all our California, policyholders. So traditional long-term care is policies are typically the first stop that people look at. Some people go that route, a lot don't, for the reasons I just brought up. And when you don't do that, you're kind of back to self-insuring. Like I said, you're funding that out of your own savings or portfolio. I would not villainize that. You set aside money that is designed for long-term care. If you don't need it, your family gets what you allocated for long-term care and didn't need. And if you do need long-term care, you spend that your portfolio down from the conservative parts, up to the, moderate and then finally maybe the most aggressive, right? Option number three that I observe that a lot of good savers use in this situation are called hybrid long-term care policies. They feel a bit like the things that you would like about traditional long-term care, but they also feel a bit about what you'd like about self-insuring. So it's a hybrid. It kind of feels like a little bit of number one and number two. Therefore, I'll call this the third option. And with that, typically clients who are good savers, worried about long-term care, not addressing it until their 60s, might just take that same money that they would just acknowledge, this is the first, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 that I would spend on long-term care if I need it. And rather than park it in, let's just say a money market account, they might park it in an insurance policy. So it's the same money you would self-insure with, but there's really three exit strategies when people go this route. Number one, some of them have varying liquidity options. Some of them are liquid 100% day one. Other ones might have the money mostly liquid immediately or over time. But there are examples, just to use a quick example, where you can put in, let's just say it's $100,000. And if you change your mind, you can have the $100,000 back out. I will point out very few people ever liquidate these, but what makes them comfortable about looking at this approach is the fact that you could. So exit strategy number one, exit strategy A in this hybrid long-term care scenario would be that you could liquidate your money and get it back. Option B would be to leave it as a legacy. Again, you could prudently plan for long-term care and, live a long, happy life, never need long-term care and pass away in your sleep. And then what would happen is that all of the money you allocated to pay for your long-term care expenses that you never needed just goes to your family. The death benefit on these policies is almost always worth at least as much as you put in. It's usually that or just a little bit more, Jim. It's not designed to make your family wealthy. It's designed to return the capital that you prudently set aside for long-term care and didn't need. So your family's no worse off for you having planned for long-term care with an insurance policy and never needing long-term care. Option C would be using it for long-term care. And what works out with these approaches is the fact that you get to leverage your dollars. So if you put in $100,000, to plan for long-term care, change your mind, you can liquidate $100,000. If you die, your family gets $100,000. But if you need long-term care while the money's sitting here, Jim, oftentimes you've got a tax-free pool of money to spend on your own care. A lot of times it's 3, 4, sometimes 5 times what you put in. So, $100,000 deposit into these policies might be worth $300,000 for the purpose of long-term care, and it is accessible tax-free.
The thing that strikes me about that approach and the hybrid approach, Brian, is first of all, when we retire, unless you have just a history of long-term care running in your family, we don't know how, we eventually pass away. We don't know if it's extended illness requiring long-term care or it's suddenly. The thing I like about the hybrid approach is, you mentioned, if you have a long-term care policy, you could end up paying a lot of money over the life of your retirement and never collect on it. Let's say you pass suddenly. The thing I like about the hybrid policy, if you put money into the premiums, let's say it's a life insurance policy, let's just round it off to $100,000, and you never need long-term care and you pass away, well, that's $100,000 that goes to your spouse or your heirs. The reason I like that is we've seen so many times what happens to couples that are married. One spouse passes away, and when that one spouse passes away, you lose one Social Security check. So there's less income coming in. So it seems to me the life insurance hybrid is a better fit than, let's say, traditional long-term care policies where you're really making a bet that, you know, you're going to need it someday.
And that's great insight, Jim. One of the other things I would point out about these hybrid long-term care policies is that where they're markedly different than a traditional long-term care policy is that the premiums cannot change. So remember, one of the reasons people shy away from buying traditional long-term care is that you might be paying $4,000 a year for a policy that next year the insurance company with a straight face could send you a letter and said, if you want to maintain the same coverage, now you have to pay, you know, $1,000 more a year, right? That does not happen with hybrid long-term care policies. So it is what it is, right? So it's designed to look and feel very, very stable. And it's not cash in your portfolio, but I think the insurance companies designed it to feel very much like cash, both from your liquidity standpoint, your legacy standpoint. As you just pointed out, if you pass away and don't use it, your family gets every dollar back. And of course, you can leverage it for long-term care. And that's a great point about the loss of income when one spouse predeceases the other. And there's a lot of dynamics that go into a long-term care event, and being able to pass unused monies set aside for long-term care back to a surviving, usually spouse, but beneficiary is very important.
Let's talk about some of the myths about long-term care. In one of them, and since you deal with Medicare, is a lot of people think, well, they retire, Medicare covers, you know, maybe they have Medigap insurance. They think that Medicare covers long-term care. I wonder if you might just address what Medicare covers and what it doesn't, because this is one of the big myths that people have about Medicare.
Absolutely. And, you know, with this myth, I think one of the things that propels it, Jim, is that at the end of the day, all of us would really like it to be true that Medicare covers long-term care. So sometimes it's a little bit easier to believe or at least hold out hope for, right? One of the things I share with people at the end of a Medicare enrollment is that, number one, I find that if long-term care has yet to be addressed by the time people enroll in Medicare, they're usually thinking of these two topics, you know, kind of at the same time. I always like to let people know that Medicare supplement insurance typically covers up to 100 days of skilled nursing, and that is very important, because skilled nursing is very expensive. Skilled nursing is basically a hospital with a lot fewer doctors, okay? So it's great that Medicare will cover up to that 100 days. It's not something you get to order like a concierge service. The really, a few things I like to point out is that, number one, if you ever need long-term care, it usually lasts way more than 100 days. So there's always risk remaining there. And number two, skilled nursing is usually not the first type of care we're going to want or need. It's probably the last type of care we're going to want or need. Last I heard, about 80% of long-term care events start off in the home. There's a lot of great facilities out there that are very, you know, nice and have a lot of luxuries. None of them compare to being at home. Everybody wants to be at home for as long as they can. Medicare will cover up to 100 days of skilled nursing. But you need to be hospitalized, usually for 3 days or longer. And then at some point, as you're making progress, the hospital basically says, hey, you can't go home, but you can't stay here. So they're going to send you to skilled nursing for basically rehabilitation. As long as you're making progress, you'll remain at skilled nursing. But I always like to point out is if you're making a certain amount of progress and then you plateau, Jim, then they say, okay, well, this person's alive. They've made as much progress as they can from a rehab standpoint. Since we don't anticipate their, you know, ability to perform daily activities, to improve beyond this point, we're going to discharge them, and now you're in a long-term care event. So, you know, I get financially, best case scenario, you could ride out 100 days of skilled nursing. I don't think you'd want to do that, but there's a lot of moving parts that would get you to the 100 days. I would set the expectation that most people are going to be discharged well before 100 days and be responsible for paying for and arranging their own long-term care well before 100 days.
Let's talk about a situation that's practical. But one more situation I want to address before we get to that. What if you're in a situation, Brian, where let's say both spouses are the one most likely to end up in a long-term care facility is in poor health. So it's unlikely if they can get long-term care, it'd be so expensive, number one. And number two, even in a hybrid policy, if you're in poor health, even just getting a straight insurance hybrid policy could become a problem. What about the idea of an annuity where, let's say there's an annuity on the husband's life. It's an investment. If you don't need it, you can draw income out of it. But if, let's say, the spouse that is ill has to go into a long-term care facility, you annuitize it.
Yes. So for people that we anticipate will not be qualified for a long-term care policy due to, you know, health history or just not being able to navigate the underwriting process, I would say a viable option beyond that would be an annuity. There are definitely annuity products that are designed to provide lifetime income to make sure that you really have a paycheck in your mailbox for the balance of your life, regardless of the value of the annuity. And to your point, several of the insurance companies will increase that monthly check if it is specifically a long-term care event. That those are very, very good strategies. If I may, another thing worth pointing out is, you know, there's back to the hybrid policy. If, you know, some people have the $50,000 or $100,000, in their portfolio, again, it's usually the same money they would use to pay for long-term care out of their pocket that they're allocating to the hybrid policies. Other people, the portfolio dynamics might be a little bit different. And a lot of people have annuities that they've actually, you know, invested in and let sit and grown tax deferred over a long period of time. And some people get to the point, Jim, where they, you know, they really don't anticipate ever drawing income from that annuity. A lot of times there's opportunities to make a tax-free exchange with that lump sum annuity that maybe you thought you were going to use for retirement income, and now it just appears you're not, and do a tax-free exchange into an annuity that actually mimics the dynamics of the hybrid long-term care policies we talked about.
So, Brian, what would you recommend for somebody listening to this program? Let's say, and let's take three situations. Somebody that is young enough to be thinking about it where it's inexpensive, let's say somebody in their 50s. Number two, you're now retired and you're thinking not just of the day you retire at age 65, let's say, or 66, but you're thinking 10, 15 years down the road. And finally, a situation where, you know, let's say that you went to see the doctor and there are signs of early dementia. So take those three scenarios, and what would you recommend?
So one of the things I would start off with the end in mind, on average, Jim, most long-term care claims are filed at about age 80. Now, that's the average. So there could certainly be examples of people filing at 75 or 85, right? But age 80 is about the benchmark that you think about. So as we back into option number one, would be somebody young enough to think of it, you know, in their 50s. Again, time is on their side. You actually can fund these hybrid policies. We used an example today of just doing it in a $100,000 lump sum, but you can actually fund them over usually up to, you know, 5 or 10 years and just chip away at the premiums. And a lot of the policies offer inflation riders that really work to the person's advantage. So if somebody's able to even, you know, chip away at the premiums over 10 years in their 50s and use an inflation rider, they'll almost certainly wind up with a nice, robust long-term care benefit available to be accessed around age 80. So earlier is better. And again, they can chip away at it in paying those premiums over multiple years. That's what I would suggest for the younger client in this example. If there's people, option number two, who've just recently retired, by that time at age 65, usually if I was to ask somebody, have you ever known someone who's needed care in their home or in a facility? Jim, the answer is never no. Everybody knows somebody who's needed to be cared for. And the other thing people notice is that, you know, long-term care is not a one foot in the grave type of event anymore, Jim. It's you just need some help with some daily activities. You know, the challenge is you basically need a non-revenue generating employee who becomes pretty expensive to help you through that. It's worth planning for. But for the recent retiree, I would say 65 is a lot of people worry that it's too late, but especially I would say usually it's too late for traditional long-term care. But that's okay, because for reasons I brought up, a lot of people look at those and don't buy them. But it's not too late for hybrid policies. I've helped guide clients in their 70s into hybrid long-term care policies. The benefits might not be quite as strong as they would have been 10 years ago. But again, if they change their mind, there's liquidity options. If they pass away and never need it, the family gets every dollar that you put in. So there's plenty of options for that recent retiree. A lot of these policies will write up to age 80, which people don't expect and are pleasantly surprised by. Option number three would be somebody who just got some unpleasant news. It's helpful anytime you're contemplating applying for any type of insurance, but certainly long-term care, to just share with your insurance agent, you know, what the bigger health issues that you're worried about coming up would be through the underwriting process. I always tell people, look, I'm on your side. Tell me now, so that we can figure out, one, if we should apply, and then two, based on certain things in someone's health history, there might be certain insurance companies that are a little bit more agreeable to that. But if we got to a point where, let's say early onset, you know, dementia or Alzheimer's, I would say those people are really not going to get approved. And for those people, again, I would look back towards the lifetime annuity products that you referenced earlier, which can make sure there's a check in the mailbox every single month for the rest of that person's life. And they can, you know, try to grow the capital and maybe even grow that lifetime income. But the check in the mailbox either stays the same or goes up. It can't go down.
You know, what would you tell individuals? I've seen, in fact, we've dealt with couples where, you know, maybe they had a financial plan, but they really didn't take into consideration long-term care or let's say medical expenses. I think it's Fidelity every year publishes the out-of-pocket costs for medical for a couple age 65. And, you know, Brian, I've seen that go up. I think it's currently close to $280,000. What would you tell that couple? Because let's say let's just make husband and wife same age. They retire at age 65. Both are in good health. These are the things you're not thinking of when you're in good health about what may happen down the road.
Right. Jim, at times while I won't discount the numbers that Fidelity has come up with, and they've actually been at the forefront of creating that report and updating it annually. Candidly, there's certain things in the financial plan that are addressed in lump sums, and there's other things that are in cash flow. I find the $280,000 figure a bit unnerving, which maybe is what it's designed to be, right? What I will point out that is Medicare, by and large, is good to great news for most everybody, and that's obviously the source of your health insurance and retirement. I mean, almost every case, Medicare is better benefits than people were used to when they're working, and less expensive in real dollars almost every single time. So understand that a lot of these expenses are funded in cash flow, not so much the lump sum. That $280,000, obviously there could be some lump sum expenses there. I would say the biggest culprit, and I don't have that report handy, but the biggest culprit would be long-term care, because obviously those expenses come fast and furious in short durations and require, you know, much larger checks to be written. I would submit to somebody that if they're, you know, well positioned for the Medicare plan that works out best for them, some of that $280,000 will be absorbed just in monthly premiums that they'll probably be pretty happy to pay, because Medicare is usually pretty great deal. And then above and beyond that, to the extent that $280,000 or the balance of it was unnerving to them, I would say the thing they could do, the the thing they could do the quickest to probably make themselves feel better about being prepared for that would be to prepare for long-term care, because that's where the lion's share of that, of your biggest health related costs are in retirement.
You know, and one other issue I'd like to address, we've been talking about individuals who may need it eventually and need it. But I want to address this to our younger listeners who may have parents that are getting on in age. It's something you need to think about, because what comes to mind, Brian, is I had a case. So this was a couple of years ago where, you know, mom and dad retired, dad passed away. Mom was getting along fine. She had enough money coming in from pension, Social Security, a few investments. And all of a sudden she developed dementia. Fortunately, this wasn't in California where it had been expensive. But all of a sudden now there was an additional expense of $6,500 a month. There just wasn't the money coming in to pay for. So in the end, mom had to go live with one of the children because there just simply wasn't the money to pay for it. And that's an issue that you may want to think about if you have aging parents. Make sure that they have a plan. Well, listen, Brian, as we close, if our listeners would like to get in touch with you or get information about long-term care or maybe some of the options that might be available, how could they do so?
They could best reach me at area code 619-885-0556, or they could also look me up at bridlewoodinsurance.com, BRIDLEWOOD, insurance.com.
All right. Well, listen, Brian, thanks so much for coming on the program and sharing your thoughts with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
You betcha. Bye-bye. That concludes my interview with Brian MacArthur. And, you know, I hope this maybe raises some questions in your mind, because one of the issues, folks, you do not want to start and deal with, and this, it's just so devastating what happens, is make sure in your plan you have made provisions to take care of long-term care. Because let's face it, we're living longer. Medical technology is allowing us to live longer and live better. But the caveat is the longer we live, the greater possibilities that one spouse, sometimes even both, could end up in a long-term care facility. Don't find yourself in that situation. Have a backup plan, or what I call Plan B. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.